the whirlwind.
Who is that that questions my wisdom with such ignorant words? Brace yourself like a man, because I have some questions for you, and you must answer them. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you know so much. Who determined its dimensions and stretched out the surveying line? What supports its foundations, and who laid its cornerstone as the morning stars sang together, and all the angels shouted for joy? Who kept the sea inside its boundaries as it burst from the womb, and as I clothed it from the clouds and wrapped it in thick darkness? For I locked it behind barred gates, limiting its shores. I said, this far and no farther will you come. Here your proud waves must stop.
As you can see on the PowerPoint, the title of the lesson this evening is called Science Deniers. And perhaps you've kind of heard that phrase or expression here recently. Some time back, and I'm not even sure what time that began to be used exactly, but it had to do with some instances where people began to question certain things that science might say, certain advocacy on their part, or at least certain people who were, in some instances, in the political arena, promoting something. And so as a counter to it, when questions would arise, they would call a person, an individual, a science denier. And so it's kind of interesting as you start looking at this, who would in reality be a science denier? Who would that person, if you're going to try to use that terminology, who would that really describe, a science denier? And part of this kind of come up as I was looking at some other things and thinking about certain areas that we are going to talk about over the next few weeks, like evolution and creation, abortion, things attached to that subject matter, you know, these various science disciplines that have to do with biology, for example, astronomy, things that have to do with geology, things of this nature that we look at, and the sciences are there, and talking about the physical sciences that we find around about us, and these individuals who are scientists, investigators of these matters. So you start looking at various aspects of this, including things like gender identification, terminology that we, growing up, I never even heard of such things that are now part of the present vernacular, things that are being talked about. And some of it, you start looking at it and shake your head in somewhat disbelief. And so this idea of science denier, so I wanted to kind of approach this subject and talk about the things associated with science deniers, and who would be science deniers, and how that terminology is employed. It's kind of used in a way to discredit some, and yet at the same time, as I would suggest to you, and as we go looking at this, the science deniers are not us. As we think about the various subject matter that we'll eventually get into, and as I introduce this material this evening, what I really want to emphasize is we're not the ones that would be in that area that would be referred to, or should be, even though we are then described in that manner, we're not the science deniers. Let me, first of all, define some terminology. Britannica.com, here's what science, as it's defined, science, any system of knowledge that is concerned with the physical world and its phenomena, that entails unbiased observations and systematic experimentation. In general, a science involves a pursuit of knowledge covering further truths or the operations of fundamental laws. A fairly self-explanatory kind of way to describe things. Investigation, examination, experimentation, duplication of those efforts. Science, systematic, when it starts going through the various areas, when they're going to look and examine phenomena, try to explain it, get some information behind it. A great deal of advances have been made in the realm of science in these various different disciplines, again, that we see, and medical science being amongst those things that are fundamental to what we find taking place. And it's improved our lives dramatically. A goodly number of these things that have taken place have certainly helped us in various sundry ways, and we're certainly thankful for that. But now as we go along, there's these other areas, and again, sometimes politicized, as it involves some of these matters, and certainly entails some things that people want to promote. So here, then, denialism is the refusal to accept well-established theory, law, fact, or evidence. This is from an individual. I pulled this up, you know, kind of looking at different expressions, trying to give some direction as to what's under consideration. So I use this individual, Mark Hoffelnagel, April 30th, 2007, denialism blog. It's just something put out there. And so here you're going to start to say, well, to deny something. Well, it's to refuse to accept it. It's well established, the theory, law, fact, or evidence. Another quotation that I've pulled up, and it has to do with the difference between skepticism, if you will, and those that would be these science deniers. A skeptic will question claims, then embrace the evidence. A denier will question claims and then reject the evidence. This is a quote from Neil deGrasse Tyson, on May 16, 2016. I took this off of this particular website, Rational Wicca Org, Wicca Denialism. It was one of the quotes that are there. You may recognize that name. He's fairly popular these days in some of the places you can go to, television, where he's involved in talking about he's an astrophysicist, and he talks about the heavens, astronomy. He's got a bunch of degrees behind his name. Very charismatic in the way he presents things. So now he's going to give this definition. So here's the distinction. Skepticism is good, but being a denier is bad because a denier rejects the evidence. And again, I find that interesting. And certainly I think that there's some substance to that. We can fairly note that and state, yes, if you want to look at these types of matters, and we're going to evaluate it, then certainly that is an appropriate thing to think about and to take into account. So looking a little bit further then, I've got the Bible and science. So from the introductory perspective, what we're going to look at, let's think about the Bible and science for a minute. Now, what I'm about to look at, and I preface this because we're going to look again at some different ways in which things are described. And as we look at this, I don't want you to initially, as you think about what I'm putting up here, that this is what I'm saying the situation is. Because at the conclusion of this, I've got three different points here. At the conclusion, it's going to be noted where it comes from. And I use this in order to help be able to examine and to pursue this course of thought along with you. So just as, again, a point to think about, here's the idea behind disputes arise because science and religion are two very different disciplines based on different foundations. Again, this is the person's explanation of these matters. And then we're going to look at it additionally. But here we begin with religion. Religion beliefs are typically based on faith. I have no issue with the idea of faith when one defines it properly and correctly. But as we go through this, it's typically based on faith. Most religious folks believe that through revelation, God has taught them absolute truth. Plead guilty. Any compromise with those beliefs of scientists would require them to reject their own religious beliefs. Very few are willing to do that. So do you see the fundamental groundwork that's laid here? where these things are established? So here's the next one that's noted. Scientific beliefs are generally, remember these are the two different disciplines, different ways of approaching these disciplines and foundations. Religion, we've already defined, or at least he's described, as how this approach is taken. Scientific things, or scientists do it. Scientific beliefs are generally based on observation. Any compromise will require a scientist to reject hard evidence. And what's interesting is this is taken from a website called religioustolerance.org. And when you go through this particular one, if you're interested, you can go there and start looking at these different areas. Religioustolerance.org covers all kinds of differing religious groups, including the idea of some things of atheist, agnostic, things of this nature. They go through this, but the idea of tolerance being fundamental to it. This is under the subject matter of science deniers. So it came up when I was doing some of this research and religioustolerance.org. And in this thing, it talks about the two areas that it sort of elaborates upon in this section, which is somewhat of a lengthy reading. One had to do with evolution, and the other had to do with this idea of gender identification. And so he goes through and gives these things. And so he goes back here, and it just struck me as very ironic in some respects as you start looking at some of the argumentation that's set forth. When you go back and see even the definition of these things, science is based on observation. In other words, scientific information that's going to be something that's factual in nature. And think about this. This is really the essence of the point. Religion is faith-based. Science is fact-based. You see the way that's set forth? So we have to reject our faith that's just based upon, the matter and way in which we're going to embrace that regardless of the evidence, whereas science embraces the facts because the evidence substantiates it. And I want us to be appreciative of this whole approach because it's fundamental to how we're going to look at some things. And some, again, ironies attached to this when you start making the investigation and following through on it to see where the facts truly lead us and what science really tells us about some of these matters. So now, one additional thing to look at, and this is going to follow with what time we have left. My introduction to this, like I said, there's going to be some other things I want to deal with, talk about. I think it's imperative that we be appreciative. We live in a world around us in which our beliefs are constantly under attack. And not infrequently from what would be among those that would be in this scientific community or among those individuals. And again, politicizing a goodly amount of these things. There's all this type of effort that's pushing certain agendas. And the undergirding of this is supposedly scientific information that is going to substantiate this. And so we wrestle with these matters. And I want us to be impressed with the fact that we don't have to in any way be intimidated by that. That's not the approach we need to be following. That's not something that we need to be concerned about, because when we go through a study, and we'll talk about faith and the aspects of faith, there's some elements of faith. One of the lessons I plan to talk about is miracles and things associated with the miraculous as it relates to these matters. But first I want to deal with some of these other things prior to that to give us some sense of our foundational matters that we can look to and that which bolsters our faith and confidence. Scientists down through time have often erred in matters of science, not the Holy Bible, which has been shown to be scientifically accurate. While the Bible is not primarily a science text, many scientific matters are mentioned in passing, and when mentioned, they later are shown to be accurate. That's creationism.org. There's another one of these places you can look to. There's a wealth of material that has scientific information that comes from a biblical perspective. And that's also beneficial to us, that helps us to be able to glean from it all kinds of information, which I freely acknowledge I'm not qualified to be able to speak to a number of things. I can make certain observations, and I think that there's some things that we can relate to very fundamentally, and just from a standpoint of our own lives, there are things that from the standpoint of being rational, thinking human beings, that we can kind of fathom and see things, logically advance it and consider it. But some of this information and people that have researched this and those individuals that have the credentials and that they can point to as well, it's not like all the credentials are on one side of the ledger here of people that have looked at these things and have been able to substantiate and show some ways in which we can note that the Bible is accurate. It's not a science book. But God, as we go through it, created all things, and we would expect this to be then in harmony with what we see around us. And the sciences would certainly substantiate the things that we'd be able to observe. Just before I even go into this next, this creationism.org had a chart. And the chart is what I want to show us this evening, kind of talk about these things a little bit together. Using that information, again, I think it's profitable to us to consider it and to reflect upon it. It doesn't go into archaeology at this point in time, but we just sang the hymn about the walls of Jericho came tumbling down. And you start looking at some of the various things, different disciplines, different science research areas, archaeology, for example. There's an interesting thing that Jericho has been, they found it, they dug there. There's some things that are evidential as it relates to it. They know that these walls were there. They were substantial walls, that the walls themselves did come tumbling down. They can see this. And fire followed that. There was a fire that took place. All of that is shown and demonstrably noted. And the archaeologists and the digs that have been done, they've laid this out. They have all this information. And among the things too, as my understanding, of course, these people that are trained in these areas have looked at this matter, that there's one section of the wall where the other parts of the wall fell down, but there's one section that stood. And the way that this thing was built and the way that it came, it was obvious that it fell down and the collapsing on itself and the way that it's described, that this one section is present. And what's fascinating about that one section is, if you'll recall in the account, what happened when they were sent in, God instructed with Joshua sending them, they marched around the walls each day and seven times on the seventh day and blew the horns and the walls came tumbling down. They're going to rush in so that they can go over the rubble, get in there, and then the fires that were going to be set, everything taken, plundered completely. And of course, the plunder was to be given to God. But there was one, Rahab, she had protected them. And what did she do? She had lowered them down from the wall because her house was in the wall. The wall's thickness and everything, there's some interesting things about that. They have evidence to show the nature of the walls and how the living quarters for some was there in the wall area and being lowered down, and said that she would be spared, her and her house, the people, the family members that were there in her house. So would it not stand to reason that there'd be a section that would be spared? And yet that's exactly what they found. Again, just fascinating things that you look at. The other thing that you'll come across, and this is where the scientific element and the archaeologists come into play, the argument that that wasn't happened during the time of Joshua, and that that wasn't really what occurred, because they say the time period is wrong. So when they put a time frame on it, they said, well, when Joshua was going through there, this didn't exist, and these things took place at a different point in time. So they discount what they see as it relates to what the Bible records, even though it follows exactly in every detail about what occurred, because they put a different time period on it. And that's one of the things that we see with this idea of those who are the ones that will reject what we find, even those individuals that are the people that are supposedly the experts in these fields. We can discount it, not because the information doesn't correspond, but because we put it in a different period of time as we see it, as opposed to seeing, well, that had to be what occurred because that's exactly how it's described. And I make that point because it's one of those things that I think is helpful to us. When they reject it, it's not because it's being rejected by based upon what the information is and the facts, but because they interpret it in a certain way. So they can, in some instances, reject it. So let's look at this chart here for a minute. Scientists used to believe, here's the three categories, but now science shows, and the third category, the Bible always said. You know, and some of these things may be familiar to you. Some of them were with me, and some of them, as you go through it, just as a point of reference again, the Bible doesn't use scientific terminology as we think about the scientists today. The language that's used is language that would relate to and describe something, sometimes in a poetic fashion. But nonetheless, it's present, and it's there to be observed. So we start looking at a number of these things. Science used to believe only between 1,000 and 1,200 stars in the whole universe. And, you know, with the eye, you look up there and you see it, and it's pretty impressive. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament is handiwork. That's the psalmist said, right? And you look up there, so how many can you see just by observation like that? Well, they came up with somebody at some point, and this is, again, this chart. Well, we can identify or look at, and there's quite a few of them that's twinkling out there, so we got 1,000, 1,200, and stars. But now science shows, and the reason why, the telescope, these very powerful devices now that that have come along that enable far more information to be observed. Trillions upon trillions of stars, they cannot be counted by man. A fascinating thing. I mean, look at this, and they're still trying to identify and send out there the Hubble telescope, things that are going on there. What does Jeremiah 33:22a says? As the host of heaven cannot be numbered. Talking about the stars. There's references to this that you find. And again, expressed in a way that here's the host of heavens, that not just a few things. The earth is flat. That was one time what was believed and thought as it related to this layout. You may remember some things in the debate that went on at various times, but there was this concern about traveling across the seas, and even some referencing times I can recall, and this goes back a way, so for me to recall it at all is pretty impressive in my estimation, that I can recall going back to the time when we talk about Christopher Columbus in 1492, sailed the ocean blue, going across there, and there were those that were concerned about sailing because they thought you were going to come to a point and you just fall off the edge. They talk about certain religious groups that believe that, but they got it from the scientists, by the way. So these things, and so the idea that having to do with these matters. The earth is round. Isaiah 40:22. It is he that sets upon the circle of the earth. Again, poetic in language, but nonetheless descriptive of what we see. Upon the circle of the earth. So Isaiah. Light does not move, it is just there. Light moves and has physical properties. Again, that's what science now shows. It's what it used to believe. Light waves are photons. Again, some of these things that, you know, were at one point theorized. And then through various things now, instrumentation that is available, they're able to evaluate this and observe, not just have theorized it, but now proven these things. But Job 38:19a, where's the way where light dwells? And just as a point, in the reading this evening, in the scripture reading beforehand, reading out of Job, one thing about reading out of Job, and of course there's going to be a few instances here of Job being referenced. And what was that occasion? At the conclusion of where Job, going through all of the ordeal, the challenges, the testing that he had to experience, comes to this point and he wants to have an opportunity to talk to God, to question God about what was going on in his life. And so when he had this interview, we see that's what's recorded in the last few chapters, and God begins to ask him these questions. And where were you when these things took place? And what knowledge do you have about what's going on? How can you explain nature and the universe? And so that whole description of what's transpiring shows the power and majesty of God, that he's the creator. And so it looks at this from that standpoint. So those questions, and you go through now some of those things, when they're described, we have some information that we can talk about regarding it. And even though we have some knowledge about how some of this now operates, they're still not controlling these various areas that we look there, and even the weather phenomenon that is observable. So thinking about that, here's another part of the chart. Again, the three categories. Scientists used to believe the steady state theory, the stars are just out there, but now science shows each star is unique and two of the star constellations have gravitational binding. Job 38:31, can you bind the sweet influence of the Pleiades or loose the bands of Orion? That's, again, description. It's not scientific terminology that's employed, but it gives information that's descriptive of what transpires. Isn't it fascinating to look at the terminology and then go back and say, you know, look what's being described now that we're able through various sources to be able to observe and take note of. And science used to have this idea, but science has come along and through what they have available to them, they're able to advance science. Well, that's good. But the advancing of science in these areas, what does it do? It shows that the Bible describes some things before that and describes it correctly. Bad blood should be bled out to make person well. That scientists used to believe. That's medical science. You don't have to go back too far in history to see that that idea was present. There is, as it relates to the founding father of this country, as he's often referred to, George Washington. You go back, George Washington had a very severe kind of, he was sick and sore throat and having these problems and difficulties. So the doctors come in and they say, well, we're going to need to bleed you. And so their speculation based upon the accounts and information that now we have to look back on it, and there's good evidence to suggest they actually bled him to death. They went through this thing with the bleedings that they did, which weakened him to the point where he died. Well, what was the medical science of the day? The medical science of the day said, he bleeds a person. Now science understands, medical science, blood is vital to life. Sometimes a transfusion is needed to add blood. Instead of removing blood, you add blood. Well, Leviticus 17:11a, for the life of the flesh is in the blood. The importance of the blood, the circulatory system, is noted there. Air has no weight, it is just here, it is just there. That terminology and expression, scientists used to believe that. Now, science has come along and it says oxygen, nitrogen, carbon dioxide have respective atomic weights that can be measured. Again, this is something that we hear about now, that terminology, Job 28:25a, to make the weight for the winds. So that the idea that there was this, that existed, you know, it's just sort of there, you know, we're familiar with it, the wind's blowing and everything, but that actually what makes up everything and the atoms that are associated with it, they have atomic weight as it's described today. Another group that just kind of, again, follow along with to reinforce this principle about the Bible and things that the Bible says and why we can have this confidence in the Scripture. Scientists used to believe winds blow straight across the earth. But now science shows air currents move in large circular patterns. Meteorology, you know, that kind of goes through there. And they show the various paths and things going along. They even see how weather is affected by various things that exist around. And so what was a phenomenon, because you just take at face value, so to speak, the wind's blowing this direction, wind's blowing that direction, we see this. You're not aware of all the currents and other facets of how the wind's movement is found upon the earth. Well, the Bible said in Ecclesiastes 1:6b, and the wind returns again according to its circuits. Again, not meteorological language, as people would say, or things, which incidentally is kind of intriguing to me, that it's constantly changing as well. They come up with new terms, new things that are stated, things you didn't hear before. All of a sudden, you start hearing about it on the TV, some information the way it's described now, and terminology that's utilized. Well, that's fine. It may be better ways for them to communicate certain things, but just because you say, well, that doesn't use this kind of scientific terminology, the Bible discounts it. No, they themselves haven't always used that same kind of terminology in order to discuss things. When we look here, the next part, that the earth is carried on someone's back. You know, that's kind of one of those deals which was fairly popular way back at a time when they're trying to figure out what's going on with the earth, that something held it up. Something was in place there. That's what scientists use. Now science shows the earth floats free in space. It kind of a hard thing to fathom, apart from, you know, information, if you are kind of confined to one area upon the earth and looking around and you're trying to explain things, you don't have that great deal of information to be able to rely upon. Now we have all these other things, satellites going around the earth, have all this information, the globe, they circumvented the earth and things like this, know about these things. Well, we understand that now. But Job 26:7b, and hangs the earth upon nothing. Now, how did that language get into Job? How would that be known? If others in a very isolated setting, prior to some other information that could be available and bringing it together and utilizing a multiplicity of different things over time and coming up with all this different ways in which things are then accumulated, gathering facts, how do we know that? Well, obviously, Job would have been just as isolated. Except in Job, we read about this, and it describes and hangs the earth upon nothing. So recognize that, because it came from God. Scientists used to believe people just got sick. Hand washing is not important. Let me just kind of, again, go back to medical science. It wasn't too far back in time that medical science, you read about this, and we're kind of horrified by it today. But they used to, you know, the idea of going and doing surgery and you're cutting in, doing whatever is necessary, and then just going right over to another patient and getting right in there and doing that. Didn't think anything of it. I mean, you took care of this patient, you go over there still in this same garb, the whatever blood's on you, you go over there and start working on this individual, et cetera. And so we're, ooh, that's How do they not understand and know that that's not a good thing? Germs and the spread then of infections through these various processes. Bacteria that would be then brought about as a result of this kind of unsanitary practices that would be observable, and by the people that were medical doctors doing this sort of thing. And a lot of deaths occurred as a result of the fact that there was no sanitary kinds of provisions made. Well, they were ignorant about it. Now, science shows many diseases spread by contact. So what do? You wash your hands. In fact, they have special soaps and antibacterial types of things to try to help eliminate that, or at least kind of curtail it as much as possible. So you have these types of things. Well, in Leviticus 15:13b, and wash his clothes and bathe his flesh in running water. One of the fascinating things, and I read something, this has been some years back, and I don't recall, it was in a book that I had come across, and like I said, don't remember all the particulars about it, but I mean, it goes along with this type of idea. But one of the things it described and discussed was this individual who came to be a Bible believer who was a medical doctor. And this, he's going through and he started reading the Bible, and he read back having to do with the sanitary instructions that were given there under the Mosaic Law. And through this process, he looked and said, you know, how would they know about these things? That wasn't even known in that far back as in our history as it relates to these things as medical doctors now with all these different things. And besides talking about the telescope looking up in the skies, you have the microscope and you look down there and you find all these very microscopic types of things and then the bacteria. So they didn't have that. So he became a Bible believer based upon his own understanding, saying they would not have had any ability to know that apart from revelation. When we, again, here's a few more to consider. Scientists used to believe the stars are all similar to each other. But now science shows each star is actually unique. Every one of them, they talk about, describe, things like this. When think about all those stars, and all of them are different, all of them unique. The Bible always said in 1 Corinthians 15:41b, for one star differs from another star in glory. Again, the language expressing some things in a way, and sometimes very, again, in a poetic fashion, but it still states very explicitly, here's the situation. There, next one, sometimes from nothing, for no reason, the Big Bang model, poof, look a universe. Now, this science, you know, says this. Of course, this is part of that theory of evolution. This is part of the basis of it. You start looking at it, and some things talk about evolution, and you talk about your scientific approach through observation, examination, duplication, being able to see all these things. So they have these theories, and these theories are such that they really are challenged to be able to bring the theory along in order to show and demonstrate the accuracy of it. But here's the Big Bang theory, and it says something from nothing, for no reason, we have the universe. What do we recognize? Things don't come from nothing. That's not, something's existed. But here, but now science shows every action has an equal and opposite reaction. That is real science. Cause and effect. Input is needed to make output. Now, I don't have to be a scientist to reason with certain things, right? Logically understand and conclude. So what does the Bible say? Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The heaven and the earth. In the beginning, God. Now, as we go through this, additionally, like I said, I wanted to use this illustratively, introductory approach to kind of give us a sense of some things. And to really point out that the scientists, if you want to go back and things we'll be talking about, the idea of facts on the scientist side, and therefore they're going to embrace that as opposed to faith, which we just simply accept without the evidence. That's not the way I approach it or the way we should approach it. Now, I mentioned that I'll talk about faith some, so let me just incorporate that in toward the close then of this particular lesson. It is true that as we look at some things about faith, faith will take us to an area that's inexplicable, that you're not going to be able to describe by the physical phenomena today, that we're going to be able to go through observation and experimentation and duplication and be able to do that. That's true, that's correct. But having said that, it doesn't mean that what we believe and the faith takes us into a realization that God has said things and God has laid these things down and God has set these things forth, and it's my faith that in God and what God has done and God's instructions that I'm going to live by that and follow it and adhere to it. Because what I have is already the evidence and facts to substantiate and support that there is a God. We'll talk more about that, that there is a God. And that God created everything. And that God gave us His Word, and we had the written Word to direct our lives. And once we've established that, once we understand and then we look at it, then my faith moves me through that obedience. Even when it's unfathomable, when I can't understand it, when I can't comprehend it, there's faith there. But the faith is based upon facts and information. Things that we can look to and how that's is able to bolster us. And if once we accept there's a God, then there's certainly the ability to acknowledge supernatural aspects associated with it, including things having to do with creative work. So that's the foundational matter or the points to be observed, just to kind of touch upon some aspects here to give us a sense of the direction that we want to look at, being this idea of science deniers. And as I close then, one last thought about this was, intriguing about these things is often these individuals who are wanting to use this terminology, science deniers, are the ones that deny the science. That the facts and information don't uphold their position. And they want to discount us because they say, well, you're religious. And we say, well, it's true we're religious, but we're willing to accept what is found, what is substantiated, what is noted, that can be recognized here. And biology, things that have to do with these various areas we'll be considering, where do the facts lie? And so these things help us, I believe. It bolsters us. It gives us confidence. There is a God and we need to be obedient to Him. We're about to sing a song of encouragement. As part of this understanding, God is Creator. He's done all things for us. He sent His Son to die that we can have a hope of eternal life. We're thankful and humbled by that loving care, and we need to ever be obedient to it. And if you're subject to His call in any way, won't you please come forward, making that request known as together we stand and sing.